Hi there, welcome to Elevate Your Energy Radio and Podcast. This is Evelyn, and I'm here with my guest, Dr. Jessica Drummond. Hey, Jessica.
Hi, great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me today. This is episode 94. I can't even believe it. And I'm so excited to be here with Jessica. She's the founder of the Integrative Women's Health Institute. And we're going to be talking about pelvic pain today. So I know it's been a while since I recorded a podcast and definitely a while since I've done video. Almost a year, actually. I just took a break to complete some various programs. And I also started a master's program in human nutrition and functional medicine. So I've just been reading and researching and writing. And Jessica, I know you know what that's all about.
I do. Yes. I've been in graduate school since I was five.
Yeah, Jessica actually got her doctorate in nutrition recently. So congratulations.
Thank you. And yeah, good luck to you. I'm sure you'll do great.
Thank you. I'm enjoying it. It's just a lot, you know? Yes. So, and I did want to mention, if anybody's interested in learning about different nutrition programs, that's something I love to do, is talk to people about that, because I'm familiar with a lot of them. I've done many of the health coaching certifications as well as more clinical programs. So I just enjoy talking to people about that. You can always reach out to me through Facebook, through Instagram, Elevate Your Energy. You can also email me, evelyn@elevateyourenergy.com. That's Evelyn with an E at the end. So also, if you are listening, you can't see this, but if you're watching, I am drinking, my relaxation ritual tea that I made. Actually, I made it around Christmas time, but I'm still drinking it now because it's just so yummy. It has a blend of chamomile, linden, lemon balm, rose, passion flower, holy basil, and oat straw. So it's just really yummy, and it looks really pretty. You can kind of see it here. It has like roses in it and a lot of chamomile. So just want to share that. You can get that at elevateyourenergy.com/tea. All right. So Jessica, you are a pelvic physical therapist. You also own a private practice as a clinical nutritionist. And your passion is caring for and empowering women who struggle with women's and pelvic health conditions. And you also educate and support clinicians in using integrative tools to transform women's and pelvic health care. So this is a topic I really don't know much about. So I'm really looking forward to you educating me and the rest of the people listening about this. So how did you come to specialize in working with women with pelvic pain?
Well, I started my career in physical therapy, actually, in orthopedics and sports medicine, and pretty quickly began to specialize in women's health. Actually started with a patient who came to me post-op breast cancer surgery for a shoulder injury, and just started kind of looking more into the world of women's health, because from a physical therapy standpoint, women's health rehab is very much like a specialty of orthopedics, because it's women's health related conditions that show up, you know, for example, in the pelvic joints or the pelvic floor muscles or lower back pain or rib pain or things like that, and wrist pain related to pregnancy. So it was a fairly smooth transition to consider, you know, moving from orthopedics into a specialty with women's health, because it's a lot of the same things, just in more complex environments, you know, pregnancy or cancer rehab or whatever. And then I got sick after the birth of my first daughter. I had a pretty significant hormonal crash and, you know, eventually found a functional medicine practitioner after lots of, you know, traditional doctors in great hospitals that I even worked in. And you know, as I said, I didn't even know after being a clinician for almost a decade at that point, who mostly just said things like, oh, you have a new baby, you know, take a nap, try an antidepressant, you know, like, sorry, this is how it's going to be. But I was really sick. I had tons of anxiety, really intense fatigue, and was diagnosed. It's not really a diagnosis, but was finally found out that I had adrenal fatigue, which we now better understand. That was about 10 years ago, as hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis dysregulation, dysfunction. It can happen chronically. It can happen more acutely. It's really also itself not so much a diagnosis. It's sort of like irritable bowel syndrome or something. It's a complexity of symptoms, but it's really due to a number of different things. And I think in my case, what probably happened was a reactivation of Epstein-Barr virus, because I had mono a couple of times in high school and college. And, you know, any big stressor like that can trigger that viral reactivation. And then you just have to take care of yourself, which is not something that Western medicine really understands how to do in a very holistic way, in the same way that functional medicine, you know, takes a look at every system. How's your endocrine system? How's your digestive system? How's your musculoskeletal system? How's your nervous system? And so over the course of about 2 years, I did a lot of personal healing with the help of a wonderful, really early functional medicine physician in Houston, and then began to study this much more myself, because she knew a fair amount about Chinese medicine and nutrient supplements and herbal medicine to some extent. Her son is an acupuncturist, but she didn't have, and honestly, there wasn't much research done or much training in nutrition from this standpoint. So that's why eventually I learned a lot about health coaching, which is essentially the communication skills that help you to get kind of overcome barriers to change in your life, right? So, you know, in my case, I was an overscheduled type A new mom, you know, driven kind of person. You just don't put that away, right? You have to relearn behaviors. And so the health coaching helped a lot with that, like really just completely changing my relationship with stress. And then I learned a lot about functional nutrition and how to really specifically eat to balance my blood sugar and, you know, optimize my nutrients. So I took that information back to the most complex population of women that I worked with as a physical therapist. And that was women with chronic pelvic pain, you know, essentially due to endometriosis, vulvodynia, interstitial cystitis, pelvic floor dysfunction, IBS, and a lot of times more than one of those things together. And realized that the physical therapy was the sort of musculoskeletal system optimization of that. But those patients also need digestive system optimization. They need hormone system optimization. And so I was able to take that functional approach and fill in the gaps for the patients with chronic pelvic pain who weren't recovering just with physical therapy or even with physical therapy and surgery, which in some cases is very helpful. In some cases does nothing. So, yeah. You know, you have understand that better. But so that's how I began to bring this more integrative approach to that particular patient population, because sometimes those issues can be really hard to treat.
Yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with, like, say, vulvodynia, endometriosis, interstitial cystitis, can you differentiate those two? And also with pelvic pain in general, is this something that we're talking about that's like constant, or does it kind of come and go? And what are some of the symptoms of those?
Right. So pelvic pain is a very general descriptor. It can be cyclical pain. It can, you know, just happen during the menstrual cycle. It can happen during ovulation. It can happen on a cyclical path like that. Or it can be constant, or it can be anytime, you know, just sort of inconsistent. Or it can be provoked. So, you know, pain during intercourse, or pain wearing certain clothes, or pain with long-term sitting. And so endometriosis is essentially a growth of uterine tissue outside of the uterus. So it's sort of a benign growth. It's not cancerous, but in many ways it has some characteristics of cancer, and it can set women up for higher risk of endometrial cancer and other pelvic cancers. But it's not cancer itself, but it is growths of uterine tissue outside of the uterus. That's the most common form of pelvic pain. And, you know, some red flags to look for, even in girls as they're just starting their periods. It's not normal to have painful periods. It's not even really normal to have significant cramping. It's normal to have very mild, not bothersome cramping, a little bit of fatigue. There is a hormonal fluctuation that, you know, kind of makes the day before your period a good day of rest. But if you can't work, if you can't go to school, that's a huge red flag for endometriosis. And very often in teenagers, it's missed until they try to get pregnant. Or the only option offered is something like birth control pills, which is more of a mask than a treatment. And then Vulvodynia is so inside the vulva. So the external genitalia of a woman are called the vulva, which unfortunately a lot of people don't know, even women. Internally, the canal is the vagina. And the little sort of entryway between the external genital tissue and the internal canal is a little bit of tissue called the vulvar vestibule. And then the vulva in general can be inflamed. So any pain of the vulva or the vulva vestibule is called vulvodynia, or in some cases vestibulodynia, which just means pain in those tissues. So a lot of times women will have just pain with penetrative sex, or, you know, trying to use a speculum at the gynecologist or even a tampon. It can be provoked, or it can be anytime. It can be unprovoked. It can be with wearing tight pants, that sort of thing, sitting for long periods of time. And then interstitial cystitis is a condition that is results in a painful bladder, and sometimes also urinary frequency and urgency and things like that. And then other issues that overlay are irritable bowel syndrome, constipation, musculoskeletal related pelvic pain. So at the base of the pelvis, if you think of the pelvis as a big bowl, there's a hammock of muscles that can be very tense and have literally spasms in it, like you might have in your neck or shoulders. And sometimes neck and shoulder spasm can give you headaches. It's kind of the same thing in the pelvis. One of the original descriptors is a headache in the pelvis. Mm. When you've got tense muscles in the pelvic floor, which can be a result of anything. It can be a result of stress. It can be a result of lots of heavy landings and incontinence, you know, so you're kind of walking around tight because you're worried about leaking. It could be due to a hip injury, could be referred pain from that. So it's anything that's going on in that entire pelvic region, and then the underlying causes need to be teased out on an individual basis.
So you mentioned birth control, you know, is sometimes a common treatment. What are some other ways, you know, that in conventional medicine, women are treated for pelvic pain?
Pain medications, antidepressants, sometimes things like fibers like Miralax, or, you know, fiber or Miralax, can be things like surgeries. There is one surgery that is appropriate. So for women who have an endometriosis diagnosis, and unfortunately, you can only accurately be diagnosed with endometriosis through laparoscopic surgery. It's not something that we have clear imaging or lab work for. So if you choose to have a clear diagnosis, which is a good idea if you have, you know, a symptom pictures of endometriosis, there are some very specialized surgeons, and there are many of them in the United States, but you have to find them that focus only on endometriosis excision surgery. And that is a very important part of endometriosis therapy. It's optional because, as I said, endometriosis is not cancerous, it's not life-threatening, but it's significantly quality of life-threatening. So, and it's fertility-threatening. So for women who want to preserve their fertility and or they're having a lot of pain, adding endometriosis excision surgery is a good thing to at least explore, although it's not often covered by insurance because a lot of political reasons. I won't go. Along with that, it's very common to see a pelvic floor specialist physical therapist. So, you know, there are some medical and surgical interventions, but the medical interventions are generally more to either sort of mask the pain or mask the impacts of the hormones.
So what are some of the most common causes? You did mention stress. Are there other things that can provoke pelvic pain?
So the very root cause, almost always, a stress in my experience. Now, certainly if you have a disease process of endometriosis, there are some genetic factors which make provoked vestibulodynia more common, which make certain pain pictures more common. And we do see things like endometriosis running in families and IBS running in families. So, and there are some genetic factors that have been elucidated. They're not, you know, direct one-to-one, you know, you have this gene, you have this condition, but they definitely are some genetic factors. So with stress, what I'm constantly telling my patients, so I think I've said this three times in the last 2 hours today, We have to find containers in our lives where the nervous system can be completely relaxed. And when we don't, when we're living a chronically stressed lifestyle, whether that's work, whether that's a marriage stressor, whether that's children, family, friends, whatever, when there are no containers of complete nervous system relaxation, it's very, then different things show up. Now, for some people, that's migraines. For some people, IBS. But, there are certain people that have the Achilles heel, I guess, of pelvic pain. That's where their stress shows up. So stress is a big part of that. Also, because all pain syndromes, the decision of whether or not to release a pain signal occurs in the brain. And it's not a one-to-one relationship with local tissue damage. So you can literally have been in a severe car accident, fractured your pelvis, be on your deathbed and have no physical pain in the moment. Because at the time, your brain has made the decision that, giving you a pain signal is not going to help you out here. You already know you're in danger, right? Pain is really more of a danger signal. You can also have minimal tissue damage, but a lot of other influences on the brain that give you very consistent long-term pain signals, even when it's like they can't see anything on the imaging, or your skin looks fine, or there's no, there's no yeast infection, there's no bacteria, the cultures are normal. So we have to take all of those factors that are putting information into the brain. Some is local nociception, so tissue irritation. Chronic systemic inflammation is a part of that. So if you're eating a high sugar diet, or you're over exercising, or you're just under a lot of emotional stress, that's really one of the key drivers in many cases. Or you have lack of, access to healthcare or financial stress, things like that. And then there are, local other issues that are very common. Sort of, for example, I often see with patients who have vulvodynia, they have a history of chronic yeast infections or chronic bacterial vaginosis or both. So there's definitely a gut and vaginal, vulvovaginal dysbiosis issue that comes into play with many of these conditions as well. So, again, we have to kind of take that systems approach. And so for each patient, there are different root causes, and usually it's a combination of things.
Mm-hmm. So how can nutrition help with pelvic pain? I've heard of an endometriosis diet and also a low oxalate diet being helpful for interstitial cystitis. But, how do you decide which diet is right for you? And are there any foods, that could make it worse?
Yeah, so there isn't really a one-size-fits-all endo diet or IC diet. A lot of those are kind of based on survey data. And so there certainly are things that tend to, on average, make people worse. Spicy foods, sometimes dairy products. But generally speaking, what we do is we've developed an elimination diet that is a assessment tool. And so we take out dairy, grains, soy, all sugars and sweeteners, nightshades, definitely if there are urinary symptoms, things that can irritate the urine, the bladder, like vinegars and lemons and things like that. And so it's a pretty bland but very clean diet for just 3 to 4 weeks to quiet the immune response, because we also know that when the immune system, such as in inflammatory cytokines and other immune mediators, talk to the brain about saying, like, hey, there's an irritation and inflammation, an autoimmune response, that can also be a part of that brain's decision to create a pain signal. So we eliminate all of these foods just for 3 to 4 weeks and take the pressure off the immune system, give a chance for the digestive system to begin to relax and heal. And then we re-challenge things in a very systematic way, because we do want women to have the most diverse and flexible diet possible, because many of these nutrients are required for healing. So things that we want to add in, lots of blended soups, lots of bone broth, lots of omega-3 fatty acids, walnuts and fatty fishes and things like that. Things that we want to be careful of are going to be a little bit on a case-by-case basis. But certainly for most women, sugar, for the vast majority, gluten, for some grains in general, You know, and so it depends on, again, the root cause and what that person's individual food sensitivities are that are triggering an immune response.
And you, I remember reading a story on your website about a woman who was able to avoid a hysterectomy just by changing her diet. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, well, one of the sort of old treatments is that, well, if nothing else is working, let's just try a hysterectomy and see if that gets rid of your pain. Unfortunately, it only does 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. There's no way to tell, you know, which 50% you're in. So it's not really the standard of care by any means. But she was kind of at her wit's end. We had done physical therapy. I'd given her some really basic nutrition recommendation because this was a long time ago, so I didn't know very much. And I was like, you know, let's just try to take away some of the most common irritants. And what she was having cyclical pelvic pain, and it would only occur just before her period. And she realized that we lived in Texas, and she had kind of a Mexican food craving right around the time of her cycle. And that was the only time she would eat dairy. And so when she stopped dairy, pain was gone. Just like that.
Wow.
And, you know, it's rare that it's that simple, but sometimes it is, because you can have an irritant that inflames something in the pelvis, and there's a lot of organ crosstalk between the colon and the, you know, the reproductive organs and the bladder. And so sometimes really just finding the right combination of foods to eliminate, and then ideally also to optimize digestive function with things like digestive enzymes and such, bone broth, you can really resolve the issue completely.
Wow. So I think we've kind of gotten an idea of how your program is unique for pelvic pain. So nutrition, working on the emotional part, can you share some of the other things that you incorporate?
Yeah. So it really is that. It's kind of one system at a time. We start with the elimination diet. We also look at digestive function, we look at immune function, we look at pelvic floor muscles. Usually in this setting, I collaborate with a pelvic floor specialist physical therapist so they can have hands-on manual treatment. And really just taking kind of that one individualized systems approach. Stress management is key. And so management is one part of it, but also, hey, can we eliminate any of the stressors in your life? You know, where can we work on our boundaries? You know, is it a terrible job issue? What's your 1-year plan of transitioning to a different job, or, you know, creating a better work environment for yourself? So it depends on what the root cause stressors are, but it's one thing to add yoga. It's another thing to really deal with the core issue, which is a lot of what we do.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on estrogen dominance and pelvic pain. Is that related?
Yes. So estrogen dominance can definitely be related to pelvic pain, particularly with endometriosis, ovarian cysts, fibroids, anything that's kind of a growth issue. And also low estrogen can be a problem, particularly in perimenopause or in postpartum, when the vulvovaginal canal can be pretty dry. So that can cause some sexual pain. And you can also have both. So in perimenopause, you could have estrogen dominance, but low estrogen. So you have more dominant estrogen over progesterone, but when both are really low, you can both have painful dry sex and, you know, significant PMS symptoms, which, you know, you can have both, which is wonderful.
Yeah. I also wanted to touch on, since we talked about pelvic floor specialists, how would someone find a physical therapist who specializes in pelvic health?
So there are two directories in the United States. One is with the American Physical Therapy Association section on women's health. And the other is a training facility like ours called the Herman and Wallace Institute. And so those two facilities or groups train pelvic specialists, physical therapists. There are other specialists in Australia and UK and all over. Another way to find them is to actually search hashtag pelvic mafia on Twitter.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice. I also wanted to ask you about common nutrient deficiencies. Is that a thing in pelvic pain?
Yes. What I see often is vitamin D deficiency for sure, because that relates to the hormonal system. Also, omega-3 fatty acid deficiency is very common. Fish oil is, even in some really kind of poorly executed studies, Fish oil is very helpful for period pain at the minimum. So those are two that are very common. Also, just being able to absorb nutrients. I see a lot of increased intestinal permeability, leaky gut syndrome, which makes it difficult to absorb nutrients in general. So you might have magnesium deficiencies and things like that.
Okay. And I also wanted to touch on this, and it's, a really broad topic, but I don't want to just glance over it, but the relationship between trauma and pelvic pain. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, so in a lot of the data, there is a significant relationship between adverse childhood experiences and chronic pelvic pain. And those are defined as trauma, abuse, sexual assault. But also, what I'm seeing in my practice kind of day to day, we've now started a much broader conversation about this through the Me Too movement. But sexual harassment at work, just the kind of chronic daily need to find places of safety. Remember how I talked about earlier that we need these containers of safety for our nervous system. And if you're chronically being sexually harassed at work, or you have a history of sexual abuse or trauma, or you have a history of any kind of abuse or trauma, it's harder and harder to find those safe spaces in your work or your life. But also in your body. If you have these things in childhood or teenage years or during pregnancy, when there are real kind of long-term effects on the nervous system, women just don't feel safe in their own bodies. And so it's hard to find those safe spaces where the nervous system can really relax.
Yeah, and I did want to share for anybody watching, if you want to find out more information about what Jessica shares and also learn about practitioner training programs, her website is integrativewomenshealthinstitute.com. So that's a great resource. Lots of blog posts on there. You're always writing stuff.
Yeah, part of what I do. Yeah.
I also wanted to touch on something that you talk about quite a bit on your website, which is the female athlete triad, which I don't think I've discussed on the show before. So, what are some things that female athletes need to know?
Well, female athlete triad was what we used to call a syndrome where you have osteopenia or kind of low blood bone density. Amenorrhea or oligomenorrhea, which is period problems, and eating disorder. That definition has actually been expanded in 2014 by the IOC for to it's now called REDS or Red S, relative energy deficiency in sport. It also includes men. Some men can have it. It's not just teenage girls, it's not just women. But it includes those three things, and we now realize that those three things are also quite systemic. So if a girl has lost her period or hasn't started her period by the ages of 15 or 16, that doesn't just affect her bone health, but it can affect her endocrine health, her long-term fertility. It can increase her cardiovascular and heart disease risk. So it's a very multi-system approach to looking at this issue of not properly fueling athletic performance with not just calories, but also nutrients, and then being mindful of overtraining, not getting adequate recovery, not having enough sleep, again, not getting enough rest recovery, because it affects the bones and the endocrine system, but it also affects brain health, heart health, circulatory system health, essentially every system and performance. So, we're talking about athletes in particular, we want them to have optimal sports performance, which they can't do in this kind of undernourished state.
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to talk about, which so I didn't mention at the beginning, but thank you, Jessica, for re-recording this whole thing because last time I didn't record the video and I freaked out, so thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Last time I asked you for your thoughts on the ketogenic diet because it's just all the rage, and there's some research on it for epilepsy, for weight loss, but a lot of people are doing this now, like very long term, and I just wanted to know what you think about it.
Yeah, I think we need more research. I think it is valuable for certain brain conditions, particularly seizures. But also potentially short term for things like concussion recovery or traumatic brain injury recovery. Also, short term, again, is a good transition for chronic pain. But for women, I don't find it clinically to be a good long-term plan, because for their hormonal system to have optimal nutrition, going too low carb can be problematic. Going low carb is generally good, kind of generally low carb, high vegetables, not so much grains, processed grains, things like that. Lots of vegetables though, and vegetables are carbohydrates, so but they're low in density. So lots of vegetables is generally good. And then the fat, again, kind of depends. I also do some genetic analysis in my practice, and there are some women that really can't thrive on a very high fat diet, even if it's a lot of healthy fats, omega-3 fats, avocados, olive oil. Generally speaking, that's fine. But when we start getting very, very high doses of even those fats or saturated fats, there are some people who do have greater risk from that. So, I think of the ketogenic diet as kind of like a vegan diet. A vegan diet is a great detoxification tool. It's a good therapeutic diet. Ketogenic diet can be a good therapeutic diet. Low FODMAP diet, great therapeutic diet. But in most cases, doing any of these things only for decades or even years, can be problematic for a lot of different reasons. And it does depend on the individual more than the diet, because it depends on their genetics and their activity level and many other factors.
Yeah, and hopefully sometime in the next, I don't know, 5 years, we'll be able to like really fine-tune diets to our genetics.
Yeah, and I think that's really helpful, because I've been doing that to some degree in my practice. But I also think it's still not the whole story. Like, I don't think we're going to get to the point where just a data analysis system can say, like, here's the food plan that you need to eat, boom. Because nutrition is also so much tied into cultural connections and social connections. And at the end of the day, our food plans and our nourishment have such an important interaction with our nervous system, kind of parasympathetic response. Our can we relax and enjoy food? And so even if I had a blueprint for you of the exact right food plan for your genetics, I don't think that's going to be enough to actually optimize your health. Because we have to take the social factors and the nervous system factors into consideration.
Yeah, that's a great point that I hadn't thought about. Because I feel like, we think like, oh, with AI, like we'll just be able to figure out everything, and with microbiome testing, we'll all be able to analyze it day to day. But yeah.
Yeah, but I just don't think that humans want to live that way. So you're going to be missing something. You're going to be missing what it feels like to go to dinner with 20 people and be laughing the whole time. Because we can't, like, unless like it drops out of the ceiling, like you need to have this seven things. It misses some
Yeah,
part social about food.
absolutely. So I know that you have some programs that you do online, in addition to working with people in, are you in Connecticut?
I'm in Connecticut. My
Okay.
practice is virtual at this point. Yeah. So I
Okay.
do patients all over the world. Yeah.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the programs if somebody listening is interested in that?
Yeah. So we have three online public level programs. So we have one for pelvic pain, women with pelvic pain, called Nourish Yourself, Relieve Your Pelvic Pain. We also have a preparing for pregnancy program for women trying to get pregnant. So it supports fertility optimization, but also for women who are kind of, getting ready for pregnancy number two or pregnancy number three. A lot of times we skip the recovery from pregnancy number one. So it's a great program for preparing for the next pregnancy. And then a general hormone balance program, which is great for postpartum recovery and for women in perimenopause.
Awesome. And then you also train practitioners. Go ahead and
Yeah.
share that as well, because I do know that
So,
some practitioners listen.
yeah, we have a lot of practitioner training programs. That is a lot of what we do. So our core program is the Women's Health Coach certification, which is an internationally approved, third-party approved health coach certification program. You'll be eligible to sit for the board certification exam, and that's called Women's Health Coach certification. And then we have some specialty continuing education courses One is on functional nutrition for chronic pelvic pain. One is on optimizing fertility. One is on general hormone balance. And one is on female athlete health.
So I can tell maybe your nervous system has settled down, but you're still that person just, you know, getting it all done and doing a lot.
And it's, you know, I've done that over almost 10 years now, but yes, it's, it never quite leaves you how you're wired,
right.
But I'm much more careful now.
That's great. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today. I so appreciate you recording this with me and sharing all this great information. So again, it's integrativewomenshealthinstitute.com. And thank you so much. I hope you have a great day.
Yes, thanks for watching too.